Hello, everybody. This is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. And welcome to Recovery Chronicles. This is a weekly half-hour radio program, an interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. And our very special guest today is Rich Ottison, and he's from the Underwood area. He happens to be 45 years old, and his drugs, plural of choice, are marijuana or cannabis and meth. And when we started talking about that, Rich, you had an interesting explanation. I think you said drug of choice and drug of not your choice or something like that.
Yeah, my drug of choice was marijuana since I was 17 years old. And my drug of no choice was methamphetamine. I inadvertently, or I don't know if that's the right word either, picked up the bad habit of that steady in about 2012.
How did it happen? I mean, and you're describing how it happened may serve as a warning. You know, how did it?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Yeah, I was a pothead for most of my life. Mm-hmm. Was bullied in school and really a horrible situation. I toughed it through the 11th grade, and then I dropped out, turned to drugs, drinking marijuana, and got a job and kids and wife and never went back to school. And then, that's the way that went ever since. And I moved up here from Iowa in 97. Mm-hmm. And I got a divorce then, brought my kids up here, gained custody and everything. You know, I always had a job, was fortunate in that aspect. Always. I had many different jobs, but I always was employed and took care of my kids, and I guess did okay at that.
Sure.
They're all grown now. But then about December of 2011, I kind of reached one of my goals. I got a job at a local mine. Mm-hmm. And In doing that, I quit my drug of choice. I quit marijuana, and I went, I got the job.
Is that because of drug testing, for example?
Yeah, I wanted the job, and marijuana stays in your system so long that I just didn't want to play that game.
Understood.
And so I quit, and I got the job, and I went probably 6 months without, drug-free, abstinence, not in recovery.
Yeah.
Just didn't pick up. And then it was shift work. We worked 12-hour shifts, bounced back and forth day to night, and it was hard. And I'll give all the credit to people who do that.
I hear you. I have two sons, and they're 20. Well, one's 30 now, but the other one's 28. This is what they do. Believe me, I know how hard it is.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't do it. You know, I was struggling, and I couldn't stay awake for my night shifts, and I wasn't big enough or man enough to walk away from that kind of money an hour. I mm-hmm. So I turned to the dark side, you might say. I picked up a methamphetamine habit because I thought I justified it by it was going to help me keep my job. And
was it pills first?
No, it was smoking meth.
Yeah.
and snorting meth, and it was a daily deal. I got in it pretty heavy, and it did help me keep my job, I guess you would say, for 3 years. I worked there till Halloween night. We're just about coming up on the anniversary of it. Halloween night of 2014, I was at working night shift, and about 1:30 in the morning, I was driving my Caterpillar 793 overburden truck, hauling over 250 ton in one load, and I passed out, faded out while driving. And thank God I didn't hit anybody else, and I didn't hurt anybody. I didn't hurt myself. In fact, I didn't even damage anything. I ran over a power cable when I went off the road. This is all through traffic. There was a high wall in front of me. I didn't, and I kind of felt somebody say, "Wake up." And my foot was on the brake of the truck at that point, and I had stopped myself just feet away from that high wall, but I had already ran over the power cable in the process. And that was the one night that I didn't have an answer for my drug testing. For all that time, I had always taken synthetic urine with me to work and carried with me, and I was under the influence all the time. And that was the one night that I did not have an answer. I didn't have it with me just accidentally. That's the way it worked. And I went to the emergency room and took a drug test, and I can't explain it, but I passed. I have no explanation for that.
It was most of it was out of your system, I suppose.
It had just been hours since I did some.
Isn't that amazing?
It didn't make sense. But I... So I got to go home, but I still lost my job at that point. Mm. And then I found myself unemployable, deservedly. My heavy equipment operating career was pretty much over.
Did they know something was up, something suspicious was up? I mean,
Not that I knew of. The employer. They just knew that I fell asleep while driving. Mm-hmm. And like I said, it's a tough situation to be in. And I don't know that it had happened before, but it certainly seems within the realm of possible. Before I took the test, I don't know, they may have had suspicions then, but after I came home from Sanford and passed the urine test, that I, as far as I know, it was just policy that I ran over that power cable that I would lose my job.
So is this a wake-up call for you, or where that was one of them?
I hate to use the term rock bottom, because we could always be worse.
We could
always do worse. There's people out there that have it really bad, you know.
Right. Like you said, this was Halloween 2014.
Yeah, this is when my consequences started happening, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was used to making really good money in the heavy equipment profession.
Sure.
And I found myself having to be a dishwasher at a restaurant. And it was kind of, and, through this time, shortly after, I went home and I picked back up. I didn't need it anymore to keep my job, but by this time I was an addict. And whether I was working or not, I went back home and picked back up.
Sure.
And, I lost another job shortly thereafter. And we were arrested. My wife and I had got our house raided within the next year, and I went to jail, got charged with conspiracy charge, and life got pretty tough.
Yeah.
But then in the same breath, it got pretty good, too, because it propelled us both to Heartview.
I see.
And she did inpatient. I did intensive outpatient.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a great experience. Shortly after being there, I decided I needed to be there, and we got better.
Yeah. So that was your first introduction to therapy.
And it
stuck.
Yeah.
And you probably know how fortunate you are.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you met a lot of people, both in therapy and out of therapy, who go back to treatment multiple times.
Yes.
And so you're very fortunate. Was your wife just as fortunate?
We're both doing real good. We're 18 months clean and sober now.
Boy, oh boy.
I'm even 7 months off of cigarettes, so I'm a pretty...
Wow. Yeah. So life is looking up.
Huh? Yeah. It's way up. We do our support meeting every Friday night at 7. We started that in local...
In Washburn?
In Washburn, mm-hmm. Yeah. United Methodist Church.
Good for you. So you're saving lives through that effort.
Yeah. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. You know, I went back to school getting my GED now.
Nice.
I've got one more test to take and I'll have that. And the goal is to be a licensed addiction counselor.
Really? Okay. Well, we welcome your, there's not enough.
Yeah, right.
And you know, and I know that the so-called drug problem and the abuse of opioids and.
Yeah. Unfortunately, people don't get the chance for multiple treatments, and nowadays, you overdose on opioids, and you could just be dead.
You know? Yeah, you know things are getting worse, including in North Dakota. If worse is the right,
epidemic.
It's just especially the opioid addiction is at an epidemic proportion. So, what's one of the first things in recovery that kind of stuck? I mean, obviously, you had your ears wide open, but was there? Well, was there one early realization?
As I said, marijuana was always my drug of choice, and when I went to treatment, I always knew better than to get on meth. I just justified it to keep me going at work, which was against my better judgment. And when I went to treatment, I had the idea that meth was a problem and nothing else was. You know, that was my way of thinking then. And shortly after being there, it was, you just eye-opening experience. One addiction leads to another, for one thing, and it just to see people come in there and, basically re-blossom. We don't know how beautiful we are. We come in there looking so that's the beauty. Part of what makes me want to be an addiction counselor is just, it's such a beautiful thing to be able to help others and see us get back to our full potential. I realized marijuana was also a problem because, they say it's non-addictive, and I get whatever, if they want to call it non-addictive, I did too. But then now I can say I was addicted to it because if I wasn't stoned, I was thinking about being stoned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it consumed me. And, yeah, as far as an aha moment, I'm not sure. It just all kind of flowed together, I guess.
We as addiction counselors, and I think, I'm an addiction counselor and with the legalization of marijuana happening across the country, we know that at least 10% of the people who try it or turn to it or start using it almost daily will become addicted to it, and it's just a matter of statistics, and so there will have to be programs and treatment programs and those people will be driving under the influence and every other darn thing. But, when you're diagnosing substance abuse, you're always asking some key questions. And all you usually have to do is ask the cannabis user, number one, did you ever use it when you didn't want to use it? did you ever go to huge... the difficulties are to find some, to get some, I know people that have driven, 500 miles and did you ever sort of panic when you didn't have it in the house things? there's a whole set of questions, but
yeah, that's right.
Yeah. But, Did you go through some of the traditional withdrawal when you withdrawal symptoms when you gave up the meth?
With the meth, yeah, yeah.
Was your wife using it too?
I mean, yeah. And as that was more her drug of choice, you know.
And I'm sorry, maybe I'm getting too nosy, but we're mostly here to talk about you. But yeah. I was just curious.
Well, when we went to jail, when I went to jail, I was there for 3 days. And of course, you know, you'd like to sleep every minute you're in jail,
right?
Cause it's not a good place to be. But when we, when I was finally released, I got bailed out and, I couldn't hardly walk. I couldn't stand up straight. I can't tell you how bad that hurt. I thought that I had some kind of a, disease going on or something, you know.
It's amazing.
I thought there was something severely wrong with me because I was in such pain. You couldn't put on enough Icy Hot or Bengay or take hot showers, or it just crippling, constant. You couldn't get away from it. And I was like that for, geez, I felt like forever. It was at least a couple weeks, really,
before physical withdrawal, before
I felt like I could move normal.
Physical withdrawal, probably mental withdrawal,
and
emotional.
You're tired all the time.
Yeah.
You don't want to do anything, especially as far as work goes or anything. And, you know, I'm still far from the shape that I should be in. You know, I did 45 going on 55 or something, you know.
I've been
getting out doing physical work here lately, and boy, that hurts too. And I'm 18 months sober.
That's not a long time, but it's a significant amount of time, don't you think?
If you don't think 18 months is a long time, give money to your dealer and have him say he'll be back in a week. You know, that's like a lifetime, you know, so.
Sure. And it's not funny, but it is funny, you know. I think as far as Recovery Chronicles is concerned, this program, and speaking for HeartView for that matter, if we have people, former patients, come back to HeartView to talk to our patients about their recovery and to give testimonial, you know, that's one of our rules, so to speak, or axioms. We say, well, you've got to be in recovery for at least a year, okay?
Yeah.
And that's pretty much our rule on on this radio program too. And I think you probably understand why. You know. You start smelling the roses after. Do you now understand the word serenity? I mean,
that's very profound words in the serenity prayer. I say it multiple times daily.
Good. Because we usually close this radio program with the serenity prayer.
Yeah.
We'll do that.
Accepting the things you can't change is tough. And it's a wonderful thing. The more every day I'm clear-minded, the more I like being clear-minded. I can't stress that enough. It's like I can't imagine going back and having something affect the decisions that I make, be it anything. You know, I'm not gonna go drink and have that. You know, the next thing you know, I'd be standing out there smoking a cigarette outside a bar, like, you know.
Sure.
And then the next thing you know, I'd be smoking a. You know, you just there's no sense. Yeah. One will lead back to the next.
Indeed.
And. I love recovery. It's a beautiful thing. I went back and spoke at HeartView once now, and I stopped there the other day and plan on speaking again. It's a great thing. I spoke at the Capitol the other day about dropout prevention. The 12th step, the goal here.
That's what this radio program is also. It's really... giving a testimonial, about recovery, and I know you know the saying, you can't keep it unless you give it away,
right.
So it's important to help others, through your own recovery. So, what would you tell someone who may be listening to this radio program or whatever, and they know they've got a problem and they've been procrastinating doing something about it, but what would you tell them? What's your advice?
This is, you're a beautiful person, and we do recover. We work at it constantly, but it's not hard. It's very rewarding. You will love the person that you can be. Mm-hmm. Potential is limitless. We can do anything. It just, you don't need anything affecting your decision making. You'll love being in recovery.
Yeah. Beautiful. What are some of the things that you appreciate in life or about life now that you probably totally ignored during your using days?
Oh, everything. Just, yeah.
We were talking about how beautiful the weather has been, for example.
Yeah. You know, you just, in active meth addiction, you know, and I think it's fairly commonplace, you just want to seclude yourself. You want to stay inside. You want to fiddle with this or you're not doing anything productive. You think it's productive, but mm-hmm. you might have 20 things going on and you just end up with 20 messes. And mm-hmm. yeah, just the nature, the outside, you drive somewhere and look at all the sunshine and the flowers bloom, the fall colors and things you'd never notice. And you're always, I was always a hair trigger, you know. It was like somebody standing in line at the express lane and they got 12 items and they should have 10 and you're just mad. You're just like, what the hell? And, you know, it's sure. like serenity is real and things, the little things don't bother you when you're not under the influence, you know.
And that's one of the things, and as a counselor working with meth addicts in particular, but, you know, almost all addicts, but that meth addicts often have a short fuse, you know, have that hair trigger, very impatient, a lot of anxiety, a lot of paranoia sometimes, and you have to learn how to live with that and overcome that once you get off the drug and get through the withdrawal period.
Sure.
Yeah. What was the hardest part in the withdrawal period or learning how to live differently?
Well, in the beginning, it was the physical pain. Mm-hmm, Definitely. You feel like you're going to die. But then, you know, now in the long run, it's just getting back into shape and getting to be able to do the things that I should be able to do with naturally, you know, and get my strength back and control my weight and, you know, and to gain the respect of other people. You know, I live in a small town, and when news like this, what happened to me, breaks, you know, it's like right away, you know, everybody's got an opinion and sure. all of a sudden you don't want to show yourself in the small businesses in town and you just, the shame, you know, but this can happen to anybody.
True.
Mm-hmm. And we do recover and we, you know, we make our amends and get our self-respect back, because I had a lot of guilt, you know, just without anybody looking down on me. I looked down on myself. and so I had to forgive myself. And I'm to the point now where people, I'm forgiven. I'm forgiven by God, and that's what counts. And I'm forgiven by myself, and it's getting easier with other people. Time.
I know when early on in my recovery, one of the first things that made sense to me was people telling me, you know, my mentors and such, saying, the first person I have to make amends to is myself, you know, is it, just like you said, and that is to forgive myself. And number two, And you said this in so many words also, but that in my using, I was physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually sick.
Sick.
And that I...
Decayed, sick.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that I had to give myself a chance to get better in all areas, in all four areas, physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and that it wasn't going to happen overnight.
Right.
And if I could just do one positive thing per day,
yeah,
you know, toward recovery.
Yep. And this is where the 12th step, you know, anything we owe it, you know, to anything we can do, a little piece of advice, learn from our mistakes. We can do anything to make your life better or make you more the person that you want to be and can be. Then, you know, that's a great feeling. And yeah, I don't even really miss my heavy equipment operating anymore. I just want to be a, you know, to help others. It's so much better. It's a great feeling.
Sure. And to keep it simple, right?
Yeah.
You know,
keep it simple.
One day at a time.
One moment at a time. If you can't do a day, break it down to 10 minutes, you know.
That's right. Which is really what mindfulness is all about, and living one day at a time, and like you said, it's sometimes 1 hour at a time. Well, I'm sure it's you've been a great help at your church and at your church based group, helping others up in the Washburn area, and I'm sure it brings you some great rewards, spiritual rewards.
Yeah, hopefully. Helps others and it helps me and as well, you know. I do it for myself and my fellow brothers and sisters. We're all one big happy family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, one thing I never asked you, we got right into it, of course, but I never asked you about your growing up years or anything, but is it any addiction in the family or anything like that? What was your childhood like?
You know, my home life was normal, good, mm-hmm. whatever normal means, I guess. You know, I always say mom and dad were like Ward and June Cleaver, you know.
Okay, sure. Are you a North Dakotan?
No, Iowa.
Okay, you said that.
Yep. I moved up here from mm-hmm. Iowa about 97.
Sure.
And,
but what's the difference? No, I didn't mean that. Midwest.
Yeah, right.
Midwest.
Right. Humidity is different.
Yeah, true.
There. Hills and trees there. But, yeah, growing up, I guess, you know, my mom was a housewife, a homemaker, full time. Didn't work, didn't even drive. And my dad had the same job in our little small town, city maintenance worker for 31 years.
Sure.
And home life was fine. I got two sisters; they're quite a bit older than me, so I was kind of raised like an only child. And yeah, no trouble at home. I was, but my school life was just hell, you know. Bullying
sure,
has to stop.
You mentioned that. Yeah.
You know, and we don't live in a perfect world, so I don't have no easy solution, but you know, it's a terrible thing. And you can't help but think about that when in this day and age, we have this, all the school shootings and stuff, you know,
every
time you see that on the news, it's like, what caused that, you know?
Well, we'll have to do a whole nother program on that, you know, but I want to thank you for, I told you the half hour would go quickly, and I want to thank you for having the courage to come on, and our guest has been Rich Otteson. Did I pronounce your name?
Hollison.
Hollison. I know somebody by that other name, who's been in recovery for 18 months. He's from the Underwood Washburn area, and thank you so much. And let's
thank
say
you.
This serenity prayer then. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage
change
to change the things I can,
and the wisdom
to know the difference. Thanks again.
Thank you.